Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. You can find the podcasts listed at my website, allbook-books.com. So this is part two of the fascinating, informative, and stirring interview with Anne Kayala Kelly about her little book. And I mean little, you can hold it in the palm of your hand, but it's big in emotion and information, and get off your seat and do something in the world. It's called Our Rights to Self-Determination, a Hawaiian Manifesto, published by Kuleana Works, KuleanaWorks.com. If you were listening carefully to the first part, you might remember that means Kuleana, she said, has to do with responsibility. And the book is available at KuleanaWorks.com and AnneKayalaKelly.com, AnneKayalaKelly.com. And one of the bits that stood out to me in the second part is her explanation of aloha, which includes the love of the land, which is something that we need a lot more of nowadays. So listen up. And here's part two.
The reason I wrote it that way is because I wanted people to kind of get a sense of an overall historical background about why Hawaiian rights, first of all, still exist and why it matters. Mm-hmm. Because no matter, even though it's been devastating, we still have to stand up and say, wait a second, we have other options. Are we going to exercise those options is the only question. To me, anyway.
Yeah, there was an article recently, I don't remember exactly, but it was something to do with a telescope somewhere. Maybe it was Mauna Kea, if I pronounced that right. It was something along the lines, I mean, the gist is like, we're trying to find God in the stars, you know, but meanwhile, forgetting about the actual people with the Earth. That's what stood out to me. Build a telescope, like the desecration of the native people's connection with their origin stories, trying to find some other god, but, you know, it's like neglecting that people are trying to eat.
Well, you could say that about the entire space, right? You could say that about the entire exploration of space, which everybody is. So many people just fetishize that. I mean, they love what Jeff Bezos is doing, and they love what Elon Musk is doing. They love that stuff.
Oh,
and it's like,
gosh.
It's all like everybody's living in their own movie, right? Everybody's living in a reality TV show with their selfies, or they're living in a movie with whatever these guys are doing out there. Exploration. Exploration is code for white supremacy and colonization. Period. End. Okay? Captain Cook was a military, he's a captain in the British Navy. Okay? He was on a military mission. He was not on a mission of cultural exchange.
Right.
Okay? So this idea of exploration, he was an explorer. They call him the Great Explorer. Same thing with, like, he's the Columbus of the Pacific, basically. So the narrative of him is, like, he was just out there exploring, like Captain Kirk on Star Trek. They're exploring other galaxies. Like, no, they came here to rape and pillage. They did not come here to be friendly. They are the aliens from outer space that show up and take over your country and kill you off. That is what that project is. So even now, as people are like so fetishizing, you know, and I find these images from the telescopes out in outer space, they're fascinating, they're beautiful, but I also understand why they're doing it. It's all quite lovely to see the creation of, you know, the creator's creation, but they're just looking for something to colonize and mine and extract from.
Mm-hmm.
That's colonization. It's show up, take what you want, and take it back to where you live. You trash some other place so that you can extract from it what you want, right, as the colonizer, not you personally, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
The system is about taking.
Yeah.
It's never going to be about anything other than rape of a place and murder of the people there and all life forms. It will people who think you can indigenize the colonizer, I always think, are you eating crazy food for breakfast? You cannot indigenize, you know, you cannot make a pathological serial killer mentality into something nice. It just doesn't make sense. A rattlesnake's not going to become your friend just because you fed it a mouse. So it's like, if you think about things in terms of just like, you know, what's really behind these projects of exploring outer space or having a telescopes on Mauna Kea or Haleakala or anywhere else. It's all militarized, all colonial. It's all the colonial agenda of what can I get out of it. But people just like the pictures of it. They just go, wow, look how beautiful that is. We must keep exploring, you know. Just completely disconnect from the reality of it.
That's the facade. Like what I'm getting as we're talking, I'm getting more of a clear sense of the little narrative I grew up with as a kid is, you know, it's way more serious, but it's, you know, it's a facade. It's the theatrical facade when the stuff you're describing is troublingly real. You did say, actually, because I love word roots and etymology, you are radical because you may know that. That means of the roots. So that's like another twisting where...
But that's another word word's been turned into something that it
crazy.
Is another lie.
Yeah,
right?
Some crazy, oh, it's crazy,
yeah, it
crazy radical.
Like, oh, yeah, you're a pariah somehow. And it's like, no, actually, this is pretty grounded stuff. It's a good way to be.
Mm-hmm.
But when I say, you know, I made this seem like a radical, I'm talking more like as in terms of radical mastectomy kind of radical. The way that they use that word in that negative, toxic way.
Hmm.
That's the way they try to make it seem like when somebody speaks. And it's, and I have to say this too. It's not just like, oh my gosh, you know, it's every non-Hawaiian is a bad person. That doesn't have anything to do with the individual. I'm not talking about, I mean, yes, you have to be responsible. We should all be responsible as individuals because we're a part of something that's beyond all of us. But, you know, I'm just looking really mostly at the systems. And if people who are profiting or enjoying the system that's oppressing a people and a place, if they're not willing to consider their privilege, their entitlement, which is based on, they should look at what that's based on. And if you look at something like, what's my privilege based on? If every person asks themselves that, what is my privilege that I have right now, my material and economic privilege or my intellectual privilege or social privilege, what is it based on? And if one is really going to take a few minutes to ask that question and then answer it, they're going to see that it's probably based on somebody else's oppression, somebody else's law. And that's been normalized. And that's one of the worst things about the American project is that it normalizes in the service of capitalism, in the service of white supremacy, in the service of patriarchy, it normalizes an end of life. It normalizes catastrophic death that goes on and on and on. And that's the part where individuals can change something, is if they stop and think about it.
While I was reading the book, and you just reminded me of probably it's one of my most powerful books I've ever read, was Eduardo Galeano's Open Veins of Latin America. And that's when it convinced me about the whole, you know, the wealth of Europe and the West is basically on the backs of those, you know, doing the work and the extractivism. So that's a similar storyline. And yeah, it's like the whole, also what you're describing, I was thinking about this before talking with you. It's like the word hoodwinks come to mind when I was thinking about it from an East Coast suburban perspective. This is like sort of my poster story about how the dandelion, which has umpteen health benefits, in the mid-50s, the chemical companies, they named it a weed, and then people started using pesticides and spraying their lawns to get this perfect-looking lawn. So, I mean, it doesn't compare to everything in Hawaii, but it's to me, it's like the system is what you're talking about. It's the system at work, because that system, you know, convinced people that they had to look a certain way at the expense of...
Oh, right, right.
At the expense of, it had to look a certain way, and the dandelion became the enemy, and, you know, the weed, it's a weed, it's an enemy, it has to be obliterated.
Right.
And that became, it's like poster boy for this all this stuff. And, you know, when you said anti-life kind of thing, another book I've read that was Annie Jacobson, Operation Paperclip, and she's talking about the Nazi psychology. She uses the phrase anti-life, anti-human, anti-plant, and it's sort of simple in that sense. It's like, okay, are you going to be pro-life and respect people, or are you going to be, you know, anti-life and take advantage of people? It's intense stuff, but
yeah,
I try to simplify it sometimes because it's so intense.
I don't know if there's anything more important that any individual person can think about on any day of any year. Am I this or am I that? Because it's, and I'm sorry that Americans are so whatever that is. I mean, they don't call it, they call it white supremacy, not white insecurity. So it's like, you know, they really do believe in their supremacy. And if you really believe in your supremacy, of course, we always look at the Nazis as this model for white supremacy. But this white supremacy in America predates the Nazis by hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but it's like the sense of superiority because of whiteness. If one really believes that, you can't change that because it's in them to believe that. It serves a purpose. It's like me saying when tourists come here, they feel all innocent and they're like anything but innocent. They're the opposite, okay? But they really believe that. So I don't know if we can just meet them at the airport and throw cold buckets of water at them when they get here. Maybe that would snap them out of it, but that'd be kind of weird. So it's like, how do you really, I feel like in a lot of ways I've given up on even trying to reach that kind of mentality because it's just too much to compete with out there. Too many messages telling them, no, you are good. Americans are good. Despite all evidence to the contrary. If you even just look at right now, leave Hawaii out of the conversation. If you just look at what the United States is doing throughout the world, it's obvious that the American agenda is anything but kind. It is anything but innocent. It's the opposite of that. It's a war machine. That's why there's 800 military bases all over the globe. Americans don't stop. Everyone wants to put a hate on Russia. And if I say something like, well, okay, but Russia has like 20 military bases outside of its huge country.
I didn't realize that many.
And different. So I think it's like 21 military bases. The United States has 800.
Yeah.
Okay? 800. Really? Is this, which one's worse? Oh, China. Scary China. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. China, so scary. How many military bases do they have outside of their huge country? One.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Americans, they can't. It's as if they feel like if they stop and think about it, they won't be able to handle the guilt. That's my psychological analysis. Ever since September 11th, and I tie a lot of things to September 11th, Americans like went to the zoo and never left. Like they lost a sense of something. I want to say security or that white supremacist thing, whatever. They lost a sense of something. And the healing part from the wounds of that terrible day, it never happened. Because immediately the United States started figuring out how to invade Iraq. Immediately, within weeks, bombs were flying. Within a couple of months. There was a moment there, and I remember it really clearly, and it lasted a few weeks because I was listening to a lot of radio and reading a lot during that post 9/11 time. And there was this moment where you could hear Americans saying, why do people hate us? There was a kind of awakening happening. And then George Bush was like, hey, you got to go shopping. You want to keep the country going, spend money,
crazy.
Right? The whole narrative was about this other thing. And it just completely derailed what could have been a really healing process for hundreds of millions of people who need that healing, okay? Americans need that healing. They need to be able to go, okay, you know, let's look at what we've really done here, okay?
To grieve.
And maybe not do that anymore.
To grieve and to deal with fears. There's so much fear has been pumped out since 2001.
And the guilt and the shame of it, right? I mean, there's nothing, you know, like shaming somebody. There's nothing more devastating than that. So I'm not even really talking about that, though. I'm talking about how do you heal from what your own ancestors did? How do you heal from the things that you've inherited? And you didn't want that. You didn't ask to inherit this kind of history, and so we've all inherited these different genealogical realities. Americans won't even have that conversation because they feel like if they don't see a way out. This is just me just looking at it. They feel like, well, what am I supposed, like I say in the book, you say something like this to an American and they'll say, what are we supposed to do, give the Indians all their land back? That's like, they speak like that. They go, well, what am I supposed to do, give it back? It never occurs to them that, yeah, maybe you should maybe return the stolen property and, you know, maybe there's other ways to be here and to not keep taking and not keep destroying. Maybe you should acknowledge that these people have rights and that those rights should empower them the way your fantasy of supremacy is empowering you, you know. System, sadly, is just kind of bent in this other direction.
what I see as far as, you know, in the literary book sense, your book helps to, you know, it's definitely an eye-opener, and it just opens up that discussion of, for anybody who's interested, to really look at some of the stuff that's really going on. And you say it started January 16th, 1893, when they did like the first coup, and then it goes on to some of the stuff we talked about. What's the best way for people to get the book to through you, or how else?
Well, I mean, I'm the only one selling it. They need to go to the website, aculeanaworks.com,
okay,
or annkaylakelly.com. I do want to say this one thing, because you're reminding me of how it ended, because I haven't obviously read it in a long time, but one kind of, for me, a kind of driving thing behind even bothering to write this down is so that anybody looking at it can understand there are huge benefits to supporting Hawaiian rights to self-determination, because this is the first nation state, the first country where the United States, where Uncle Sam changed the power, came in and just moved, pushed out the legal leader, Queen Liliuokalani, and her government. It's the first place that was done, the first nation state that was done to. All of what the Hawaiian word is hewa, that's why the name of the film is Noho Hewa. The Hawaiian word for something being wrong is hewa. So all of these wrongs that have come out of Hawaii or stemmed from the occupation of Hawaii throughout the globe, most of it military, but all of that is also commercial and capitalist. All of that stuff that's staged here comes through here from the United States on its way to do something to some other country and some other people. You know, to respect Hawaiian rights to self-determination is to begin the end of that American Empire project. Mm-hmm. And I know that probably sounds bigger than it should to people. They're like, what? You know, Hawaii is this puny place. But it's, you know, historically, spiritually, culturally, and politically, it's absolutely true what I'm saying. Because the first country that the United States, the first nation state, I'm not, you know, I don't mean this like, oh my gosh, we're a country and all of those, you know, hundreds of Native American nations weren't countries. I don't mean it like that. I'm talking about nation state, that kind of international legal system that the colonial powers use, okay? Hawaii was the first non-white country, the Hawaiian Kingdom was the first non-white country in that international legal system. So this country is where they put their boot. The American Empire put its boot here first before it went and did what it's done to all these other countries since. So to take that away from the empire, to dismantle that empire structure here, is to begin the dismantling of the American Empire and the demilitarization of the Pacific. And I think that's a worthy cause for anybody who says they care about things like the environment, or they care about the rights of indigenous peoples, or they care about the rights of any people to determine for themselves what they want their nation to be like, how they want to live in their homeland. So that's really kind of, that's the driving force of, you know, that's really what's behind the little book, is to mm-hmm. move in that direction. That's the reason to write it in the first place, because there are ways to change things, to heal things, and to make things more just. And that's one of them.
Yeah, I commend you, Keala, because you put a lot in a little book, which is always a good thing, I think, you know, to have a little book but say a lot. So it's wonderful in that way, and it covers a lot for anybody who really wants to just say, okay, it's not that long a read to just sit down and, you know, just go at it. They'll learn a lot. I don't think it's in the book. There's so much food for thought and emotion from this discussion that I appreciate it a lot, and I want to kind of wrap it up with the word. I'm wondering about the word aloha, because that is there, like most native languages, there's some deeper meaning. That word is almost become, is that word become like trivialized, like how, you know, almost like the way I think about namaste, like there's so many yoga people and people are going around saying namaste and it's beautiful, but it almost becomes trendy. People start using these phrases. Is there anything you can say about that word that would help reflect to people some of the, you know, the true culture that's in that word, or is it basically just like hello and how are you, or is there more to it?
Yeah, no, most Hawaiian words have like many meanings.
Yeah.
Okay. aloha is just one of those words that has a lot of meaning. So it does mean love. It does mean compassion. It means kindness. It means hello. It means goodbye. It means many things. It's treated, we use it as a kind of greeting. So we'll often just say, hey, aloha, how's it? You know, mm-hmm. It's like, hey, I'm good. How are you?
Right.
So there's that meaning of it. Culturally, the most important thing that I would hope people would understand, because you'll never get this out of the tourism industry until they figure out a way to make money from it. Aloha and aloha aina, the Hawaiians, again, I'm just going to circle back to this people who lived and thrived for thousands of years here without destroying the place. They might have fought with each other, but they didn't destroy the place because they knew they needed this place to survive. So aloha is a philosophy. It isn't just a word. I know it's become a tourism industry thing. I mean, everybody feels like all aloha when they come here because, I don't know, I guess their lives, wherever they're from, are really stressful. But
I'm sorry, I don't mean to snicker. It's just like it's truth. What you're saying is true. It's like the stress and then, I'm sorry, go on.
They're so stressed and they come, yeah, exactly. They come here and they feel the balmy air. They smell the flowers. They see the ocean. They're like, oh, my God, this is paradise. And I'm like, no, actually, it's a toilet. They've destroyed what it was so that you can feel that way for a minute. But the thing about the word aloha is that it's a philosophy. It's an ideology. Okay. It's a way of living. And so it isn't really just some kind of little pithy kind of greeting. It's far more than that. And if people could just sort of maybe consider that, aloha aina is like such an important part of all political thought of Hawaiians who are not just doing the American shuffle. It centers around aloha aina, and that's about a love for a place. Aina being the land. Aina literally translates to mean that which feeds. Hmm. It was always understood that this land is what feeds us. We are part of it. We come from it. We will go back to it. Okay? So aloha aina is about the love of life, really. And how to care for a place and live in a place. And like I said, not destroy it. You can thrive. Hawaii, and I actually live in a place where parts of Hawaii, it will grow anything that you put into it. Unfortunately, what the United States does, plant here, is war, GMOs, and tourism. It doesn't plant food. It doesn't plant love. And that's why the food that we eat, 95% of it is coming from the West Coast of America. So that would be what I would want people to understand about the word aloha. It's about life. It's about love. And it's about being able to survive and thrive. And so it has nothing to do with the tourism industry. It's really about, it's the ideological center of the Hawaiian people.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. Thank you. Thank you. So your little book is Our Rights to Self-Determination, a Hawaiian Manifesto by Ann Kiala Kelly. And your documentary, you pronounced it, and the translation is The Wrongful Occupation of Hawaii. So both are quite fascinating. And thanks so much, Kiala, for talking for a while. And just, yeah, it's given me a lot to think about. And I'm sure, I hope people listening really, it opened some interest and at least understand what's actually going on and what they can do, or at least if they do actually visit. Anybody who heard this and visited, I would think they would have some more respect.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Mahalo nui for having me on your show. Monk, can I say one quick thing before we close?
Yeah, sure, fine.
Okay, I appreciate that. I just want to talk about the cover of the book.
Okay, yeah, let me, can I try to describe it, and then you can,
Sure.
Yeah, it's beautiful, it's like this little artwork, it's almost like a little kid's drawing, but like a very talented kid, and it has like beautiful blue sky under stars, I think it's over the mountain, because I see it's like a snow-packed mountain, and then there's all these flags, and there's a road, there's like a highway road, you know, with the two yellow stripes, and it goes up to a building, which I read, I think it says in the book, but you can explain. It's almost like it's a fort or something, but it's like a very good child's drawing, but yet it's not. It's beautiful. So I don't know if I conveyed it, but what's the scene that it's depicting? Stop here, stop, you know, get off, stop messing with our land and the mountains and all that?
Well, it's the artist's name is Makaiwa Kunui.
That's a that's a compliment to her, that it's like a kid.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful illustrator. Yeah. Yeah, she's an extraordinary talent. No, truly she is. She's an extraordinary talent. She's very, I love being able to say anything about her work because she's not a self-promoter at all. But this particular image, and I just want to say where I first saw it. It was at a gallery in Volcano, and I had seen that there was this show happening out there. And I was looking at the list of all the artists, and I saw her name. And I had met her, like, in 2014 up at a screening of Noho Heva in Berkeley. And I remembered her, and she was very sweet. She gave me a piece of art, actually, on that screening. She was just lovely. And so, anyway, I haven't seen her for all these years, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go drive out there and see what she has in this show. And this, she had two pieces, and this was one of them. And it's not a large drawing. I want to say it's probably like 8x11. It's small, but I just was struck when I saw it. And the reason is because, you know, a Hawaiian word is kauna. And that, what that means is that there's layers of meaning. So in Hawaiian songs, any Hawaiian song, there's always kauna. They'll be singing about this waterfall and these flowers, and really they're just talking about two lovers or something. Like, we have all these different ways of just speaking with a layered kind of poetic presentation of it. This image, I never could get it out of my mind, because she captured literally the Mauna Kea movement to protect it from the TMT. What the image shows us, like you described it, is like we have the stars up above, and then there's some layers of blue sky, and there's layers of clouds, and then there's the snow-covered Mauna Kea, and then there's this road. And in the middle of the road is what's called the Kupuna tent. Kupuna is the word for elder. And in 2019, when I think that was the third iteration of, there was a small protest in 2014, then a larger one in 2015, and then it blew up again in 2019. And at that protest, dozens of our kupuna were arrested. So what ended up happening was the kupuna put up a tent, and all the Hawaiians around them helped them, and they put up a tent in the middle of the road to Mauna Kea.
Oh, okay.
It's the only road to Mauna Kea.
Right.
So there it is. Now you've got this tent, and if you look really closely at the image, you will see what's in there. You can see into the tent, and you can see that there are heads in there.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of the tent, we have these two drums, okay? And on the lining of the road were all these flags from all these different countries. And then the flag that's up there by the drums is the Hawaiian Kingdom flag. So what she did, I mean, it just still blows me away. She literally captured the cultural, political, and spiritual essence of what that movement is.
Mm.
Our rights come from the heavens. That's why the name of the book is Above the Stars there. Our rights come from the heavens. They come from the Creator. They don't come from America. They don't come from some nation-state system. Our rights as a people come from the heavens. Our rights to self-determination come from the heavens first. And then we have this most sacred site of ours, the Mauna. There's the sacred site. And then the Kupuna decided no more. And they put that tent in the middle of the road. And that TMT still hasn't been built, and it won't get built. No matter what you see in the news, we're not going to let that happen.
What's the TMT?
So
the telescope?
I was really 30-meter telescope.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. So you were what?
So this image, right? Just without even having to show people, it speaks the truth of us. It speaks the truth of our movement, our elders, our sacredness, our legal rights, and the fact that we're going to stand in the middle of this road. And it stops right here. And you can see the road doesn't even go on behind it. I love the way she depicted this. So she's this extraordinarily talented artist who just has this skill for pulling all of the different meanings of our movement into an image. And so I was really grateful when she agreed to let me use the image on the cover of this little book, because as you and I have been discussing, the content of the book is kind of heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So it helped to be able to have this beautiful cover, but also the meaning of it is extraordinary.
The way you described it.
And I'll say this, too. Yeah. Right?
No, go ahead.
Go on.
No, yeah, go ahead.
No, even the fact that the cover is black, that the cover of the book is black.
Yeah, around the artwork.
When we were, Right. When we were trying, when I was working with Crystal and Mary at Hawaii Lit Productions, they're the ones who laid it out for me when I was doing the layout and the design. And we're trying to figure out what color to use with the image, and it was MacIver. She said, try it with black. And the second I saw it, I said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And even that color black, it is, the Hawaiian word is the po, the night, the darkness, the black, the beginning of creation of us. We come from the po.
Mm.
All of existence comes from it. So even the color of it is kauna, because it spiritually presents as, yeah, this is... So I love that the cover of the book is black, because it just has so much more meaning.
Yeah, the night sky, and even, like, I remember reading that Egypt, the word alchemy actually means, like, black soil from the earth. I guess the earth there, different cultures have different colors. So it's actually, like, the dark earth below and the black night above. Wow, I think if you want to do another pamphlet, the way you explain the artwork on the cover, that's beautiful. It's, like, worth another pamphlet to go with the book. Seriously, the way you described it.
Yeah.
And I'm Jewish. I can say this. I'm gonna do something unkosher for a host, but the way you described that artwork, it reminded me of my recent book. I'm not trying to plug, you know. Well, if it's a plug for my book, okay. But it just amazes me now, because on the back cover of my recent book, which is a lot about having to do with gates and stuff you talked about, empire, and how some people have to go through gates and some people can't go through gates. So on the back of my book, I put this woman, Lori Hamlin, who I got permission. It's a photo in the snow of the barricade at the, I don't know how to pronounce it, the Unistutin camp in British Columbia, where there's a similar thing with the people there. They have hereditary chiefs, and they're trying to run pipelines through there. So it's very similar. It's the snow going up to this blockade. This is no access without consent, Unistutin territory. And then behind it, you know, is these beautiful snow-covered trees. So it's like, it just shows how it's the similar story. And then I have
it's the same all over, isn't
that's
it?
That's the thing. So it's
amazing. But every story, every place, every kindred has its own kuleana, and the Hawaiian kuleana is to this place.
Right.
And every people needs to be able to be the guardian of their place. Kia'i, we call them kia'i. That's the word guardian. And every people needs to be able to protect their place in the way that they know that has descended down from time immemorial. And in Hawaii, we need to be able to protect our place, and we need to be able to exercise our rights in order to do that. So, yeah, life is complicated, isn't it?
Well, that's,
it's,
I think,
complex everywhere.
Yeah, it is, and I think that's a wonderful way to wrap it up, because it's, you know, because sometimes when I'm doing these things, I'm like, okay, you know, what are people listening going to get out of it, or what can they do? And I think you just to me, you said it's like you can at least do something to, however, if you read or watch a movie or talk, whatever, sign a thing, whatever, but something to encourage some other people's guarding their place, you know. And also, I was saying about in suburbia, like, guard your own place. You know, you can respect other people's guarding their place and try to guard your own place by being good to the land and the water and everything around you. So that,
wherever you are.
Yeah, I think that's a good message to wrap it up on.
All indigenous peoples are about protecting their place and protecting the water and the land. So they should all be, all indigenous people should be supported. And hopefully people will learn something about Hawaii and the indigenous people of Hawaii here by reading this little book and hearing this interview. So, Monk, I really appreciate you having taken the time to read the book and doing this talk story with me. Mahalo nui for that.
Thank you so much, Keala, and aloha to you, because you said it means hello, goodbye, and all that. So I'll say, I think it's similar with, like, I had learned, I don't know that much, but like shalom in Hebrew, people always think it just means peace. And then I had read somewhere where it actually is sort of similar, where it's like, it's something to do with holism and being whole. Because you just say the word peace, but you have to be peace. It has to be with the land and with people you're with. And so the abstractness of these words, I think, it's similar with cultures where it's really a wider picture.
Yes,
so,
it is.
Wow.
It is.
All right, thanks so much. I'm energized and I'm ready to go out and cause some trouble after talking to you. No, I don't mean that too literally, but it does. It's kind of got me fired up just to think about, okay, what can one do to to do whatever where, you know, where one is or help somebody somewhere else. So thank you for that, Kiala.
You're very welcome. I appreciate you taking time to talk story with me.
All righty. You be well.
And thanks for listening. That was part two of the interview with Ann Kiala Kelly and her new book, Our Rights to Self-Determination, A Hawaiian Manifesto. She also has a documentary, award-winning documentary film, Wrongful Occupation of Hawaii is the translation, into English, a foreign language. Remind you of that, a foreign language that came over to these lands, what many natives call Turtle Island. So in my experience, a lot of natives are quite adept with English as a second language. I personally am impressed. So that's why I like to highlight and feature such works. And both part one and part two, the complete interview, they're both kept at the Get Lit with Literature podcast page on the website of allbook-books.com. So thank you very much for listening. Be well.